The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Are you making the most of your KiwiSaver investment? Generate is an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of strong long-term performance. Making a smart decision now could add tens of thousands of dollars by the time you reach retirement. Book a no-obligation chat with a Generate KiwiSaver advisor today at generatekiwisaver.co.nz/getadvice. A copy of the product disclosure statement is available at generatekiwisaver.co.nz. The issuer of the scheme is Generate Investment Management Limited, and of course, past performance does not guarantee future returns.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Kia ora and welcome to a very special episode of The Huffold, I think. We've got the Broadcasting Minister, Chris Farfoy, in the studio today. He is a man in charge of a very exciting, very imperiled, very dynamic sector right now. Very complex, you know. And I think there was a critique of this current Labour government, which I think was pretty well founded, that it didn't really know what it wanted to do. It had some sort of dusty 2014 era policy that it came into power in 2017. It was like, is this fine? And everyone was like, absolutely not. Eventually, you know, the whole Claire Curran debacle kind of wound its way to a natural conclusion. He came in and basically had to rebuild not only the relationship with the sector, but also kind of make some plans in a very fast-moving era. And for the first part of that, do it with New Zealand First in tow, which always a good time. What we've seen, I think, over the first 6 months of this government and towards the end of the previous coalition was a sense of we're starting to, we being them, starting to understand what it is that's ailing this sector, what it is that it does functionally, and what it might need into the future. And yeah, to be honest, as someone who's run a business through that period too, like it's not easy. You know, it wasn't really clear, and it still isn't exactly finished what the revenue side of this thing looks like, and from there, what the audience, the distribution, the creation side looks like as well. I think to their credit, they're actually moving and doing things now. And you can, you know, argue about, you know, the scale of things and how they're structured, and you know, that's all good stuff. But at least it's in motion now. We talk about the RNZ TVNZ merger. They just announced public interest journalism fund. Not just announced, but there was a lot more detail recently on that. The complexities of trying to find audience when the audience is on YouTube and Netflix, and how you serve them the New Zealand content that helps forge national identity and bind us together in what are still entirely algorithm-built distribution platforms. We talk about the Māori media shift. We talk about their relationship with big technology and all that kind of thing. And about New Zealand On Air and the Film Commission, whether there's a case for a merger there. It's a lot, and hopefully it kind of gives some sense of where government's head is at and the extent to which they're really meaningfully engaging with the sector now. Whether they're getting it right, you know, like that's a different question, but I think that they are now thinking hard about it. Before we get into it, I just want to thank our sponsor, Vodafone. Vodafone has innovation made simple and world-class network technology, and they will help you maximize the potential of you and your business. Find out more at vodafone.co.nz, and genuinely, have a listen to my interview in the previous episode with Jason Paris, the CEO of Vodafone. I think we talk about a different element of this situation, and I think he's a really interesting person to be running a major New Zealand corporate. But for now, let's just get into it with Broadcasting Minister Chris Farfoy.
K
Kia ora, Chris Farfoy.
Oh, morena.
Minister of Broadcasting in the Fold studio. So appreciate your time. As we were saying just before, it's about 2 years since we last spoke.
Correct.
And it was a Friday then, it was the other end of the day, so we were having a beer this time. It's coffee and water.
Yeah, I don't think everyone would be happy if we were having a beer now. So.
Yeah, there's unfortunately social limits on that kind of thing. But the reason I bring it up is not just to reminisce about the lovely times. It's about thinking about just the amount of stuff that has gone on in those 2 years. Because, you know, like you've got the RNZ concert sort of schmozzle, the TVNZ RNZ merger, the $55 million PJIF, which there was a lot more information about just yesterday, the pandemic, the triage funding.
Yeah.
The main thing, I guess, that seems is that the government is now in motion in a way that the 2 years prior to our last interview, 2017 to 2019, it felt a little bit paralyzed by indecision. Did you say that's a fair analysis?
Look, I think there's certainly momentum there. Some of it because of issues that were already existing pre-COVID, and a lot, you know, if you look at the stuff that we had to do last year around the $50 million, obviously was a direct response to COVID. So, look, there is momentum. So, from that perspective, that's good. Because I do think, from a public media point of view, that for the way that audiences are behaving and consuming and getting their media, we need to make sure that our public media and our private media is sustainable for the future. And I do think the government has a responsibility to make sure the public media is rock solid and can help and support and work with other media as well.
To what extent was the sort of that first 2 years feeling out of a new government versus and then the, you know, concomitant, particularly, you know, a lot of what I'm talking about has really accelerated over the last 6 months. Basically, what I'm asking you is how much of a handbrake was one of your coalition partners in particular?
Not so much a handbrake. I think they obviously had their own broadcasting policy. I think obviously coming into a portfolio halfway through a term obviously meant there was a bit of an opportunity for pause, obviously unplanned, but it meant that as a new minister you could take a fresh set of eyes to the problems. But I think the outcome was always wanting to make sure that we strengthened public media. So I think that might have had an effect. But I think towards the end of the last term and the beginning of this term, you know, it's time to crack on with it. I've always said, you know, not predicting what happens in 3 years' time, that I'm only guaranteed 3 years, and the opportunity to make the change that we think is required can really get some momentum in this three-year period, which is why the strengthening public media work is done and why the Public Interest Journalism Fund is established in an effort to help the wider sector transition as well.
So that fund is, you know, there was a lot more detail came out around it yesterday. And what is the problem it's trying to solve? Like why? Because it has not been uncontroversial, as most things are.
Yeah.
And we'll sort of get to that. But why do you believe it's necessary? And what do you hope to see it achieve?
I think there's a plurality of issues here that we want to make sure that we address. First and foremost, and I think it's an issue that the spin-off has too. It's you know, the media is changing, the way people are consuming is changing, and we think we do need to assist some of those changing business models that we have in the media at the moment. I understand that, you know, running newsrooms these days is not a cheap exercise. I don't think it ever has been. Makes it harder when the revenue is the revenue model is changing too. So it is a time limited assistance. So making sure we can help those who are transitioning or who haven't transitioned to a business model, to make sure that they have some support to support having journalists in their newsroom is really important.
You're talking about that. Is that's why it has this sort of kind of bell curvy nature to it, yeah, to some extent. Do you imagine that at the end of it, is that going to be a draw breath and see how it goes? Because obviously the nature of most government funding is that once people start to rely on it, then they tend to stay reliant on it. Do you believe that either it will continue or something else will functionally replace it.
There's a challenge in there for the media sector that it is, when we announced it back in February, that it is time limited. You know, the taxpayer can't be expected to bankroll private media or commercial media forever. So it is assistance for them to try different business models.
Well, why do you say that? I mean, it's just looking at, there's plenty of parts of media and other industrial areas that the government does pay bankroll forever. You know, looking at Through New Zealand On Air, drama and comedy and all kinds of different things. Why is the news media fundamentally different to that?
Well, because we've got public media entities that are already taxpayer funded, but again, it's about making sure, in a wider sense, that the media sector outside of public media is sustainable for the future. And you know, I would argue that some of the media in the private media have been sitting and waiting and not making decisions about changing their business model, which has meant that they are in extremely tricky positions at the moment. This funding, again, taxpayer funding, is time limited there to support some of those companies to make sure that local content, regional content, investigative journalism, like the sports, is there for the audiences, but also there obviously to assist them to look at and give them an opportunity to look at changing their business models. We will always support media through public media, through taxpayer funding. But there is a challenge in here to private media to say, we're worried about the content that is going to audiences, or we're worried about the number of journalists coming through the fold and staying in there to make sure we've got a critical mass of journalists to undertake a crucial role for our country and our democracy. But there is an onus on the media companies there to do their bit to make sure that their business model is sustainable for the future.
That's quite an interesting, you know, like the idea that it the time limit is to kind of allow them to make up for what, you know, you're almost diagnosing as a failure to act through that period. Are there, you know, and you know you've said that that's a, you know, something that exists within private media. Do you see a similar kind of, because I would say that the public and private media are essentially moving at the same speed. Sometimes the private media has outpaced them in terms of that digital transition.
Well, which is, and I think somewhere underlying that question is, you know, does public media need to have a good look at itself too? And is it fit for the future? And that is exactly the process that we are going through now.
This is with the RNZ TV and
Sydney.
So they are connected sort of philosophically in some respects.
Oh, look, we're not looking at the moves that we're making in this portfolio as disconnected. It's a media ecosystem. Crucial to that for New Zealanders, as public and as taxpayers, is making sure that we have strong public media. They have served us extremely well over the decades and have done an excellent job. The big question mark is, are we doing the best job in terms of its structure, in terms of its funding, to make sure it's sustainable and offering the kind of content that is important for New Zealanders in the future? Also, I think in the past there's been a bit of an environment where it's a little bit muskets at dawn between all media in the country. I think we've seen that change with the sharing of content, and I think realising that our media sector is small, the revenue models have changed, and collaboration to ensure the plurality of the media is going to be important in the future too.
I mean, is Melissa Lee and broadcasting spokesperson for the National Party and others have critiqued the dangers within the plan, which are real, I think, in that when if you're receiving government funding, even with, you know, New Zealand On Air as you know, sitting as an interlocutor between the two parties, you know, you only have to look at the sort of quite radical transformation of TVNZ since Labor came into power. You know, Mike Hosking was on Close Up, you know, it feels like forever ago.
Duncan, if you're suggesting that had anything to do with us, you would be misguided.
I'm absolutely not suggesting that it's anything to do with Labor. I'm suggesting that TVNZ knows who owns it and that they're right to it's essentially a form of preempting sort of scrutiny or regulation, I think. I don't think it's an accident that Mike Hosking left a month after Labor came to power and that John Campbell was hired not long after. You know, I don't think that's necessarily bad for New Zealand, but you can see the way that organizations understand who their owners are, understand which way the society's wind is blowing, and that's reflected in Parliament as well. But it's clear to me that, you know, and even down to the Prime Minister's decision to end her regular slots on ZB, which I see that Mike has this week decided you can't quit because I'm firing you, which is funny. But while retaining the morning report slot, and what I'm getting at is What do you make of those complexities of the government moving to fund organisations which have a very large role in scrutinising and holding to account their funders?
Look, I fundamentally believe, having worked in one of those organisations you've just mentioned, that they are very strident in their independence. And TVNZ has been a public media entity for a long time, self-funding, and RNZ, taxpayer-funded, non-commercial, in a very simple way, Duncan, I think you might be overthinking it.
Nah. But you're entitled to think that.
Yeah. I think the thing that I'm more concerned about with the government funding is audiences, and whether or not they are getting the best bang for investment and getting good quality New Zealand stories. Now, whether that be in-depth stuff, which I think is important, whether that be kids' entertainment, whether that be drama, I think making sure that we've got the best possible setup, that public funding is doing that for New Zealand audiences, is the most important thing. I do think the things that you mentioned a little bit earlier are what people like us who work in the periphery or in the media are very interested in. But what I'm interested in is what my kids will watch and what their kids will watch, and making sure that we set up structures to funding to ensure that they get what we got. And I think what they got in a linear world was excellent content that had New Zealand flavour about it, which could only ever come out of New Zealand. Now, when our kids sit in front of a monitor, my kids watch YouTube, they don't watch linear TV, and I want to make sure that when they do that, they get good quality New Zealand content in front of them too.
I mean, that's a really salient point. When I was sort of arguing by pure coincidence with Fran Walsh last night, our kids are growing up watching YouTube. You know, like, that is channel number one.
Yeah.
And that is so fundamental a shift that I don't think people quite understand, that everyone has their own YouTube. There are literally,
that's right,
4 billion YouTubes made up out of previous behavior and, as a way of predicting future behavior. There is no ability to influence these organizations, is there, to try and make New Zealand content be there, and no ability to kind of scrutinize that? Or is there? Like, is there a future where you say, just when you go to Alphabet, owners of YouTube, and say, look, part of your sort of the deal that we're making for you to access and be, if not a monopoly supplier, just the biggest channel in the country, is that we need you to maybe remove some of the opacity around the algorithms and serve some of this content, at least like in some form? Do you think there is a case for that?
I'm not saying there isn't, but what I'm more concerned about is that is a question in the now, right? Mm. So at the moment, YouTube is one of the platforms that is ubiquitous. What is going to happen in 5 years' time? What is going to happen in 10 years' time? If you've got that crystal ball, I want it.
But you can look at the long-term trends, you know, which are quite well established.
So it will be online. So let's say that. Another platform may come along, and then that's flavour of the day. What I want to make sure is that we've got a setup that, regardless of the platform, there's the ability to be nimble and work potentially with or have our own platforms to make sure that that content is freely available.
But do you think, this is what I'm getting at ultimately, is there is a lot of fantastic New Zealand content and, you know, some less fantastic New Zealand content. That is the nature of content, right? Who knows what we're making right now? Let's hope it's good. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is that there is a category difference between this stuff exists and people, the right people, though, especially those diverse audiences, young audiences, Māori audience, Pacifica audiences, other communities within New Zealand are actually seeing the thing and knowing that they're seeing it and being confident about that. That's the, you know, that almost feels like the next stage. And it's do you feel confident that that is being assessed or is accessible? We think a lot about the stuff we make. I don't think we think as hard about how we make sure that the right people see it.
100%. And that's why, you know, amongst the many issues that we're trying to address here, is there is the diversity of audiences in New Zealand. And, you know, in Wellington speak, the relevance of what we're doing now in public broadcasting to all those different audiences.
But the relevance is one thing. It's the discovery. The discovery is the thing that really, like, freaks me out, to be honest, because, you know, New Zealand On Air's own research shows New Zealand On Air is the biggest channel for the kind of demographics we're talking about. Oh. And you know, and Netflix rocketing up there as well. These are both headquartered in Northern California. They are ruthlessly algorithm-driven. There is no visibility over what they're saying. They're very selective in terms of the data that they release. And yet these are primary platforms. We can't change human behavior without effectively becoming a kind of a state controller of the internet, a la China.
I'm about to use a phrase I hate using.
Cool.
It's an and. So we, in the future, be working with them and having platforms that are traditional at the moment, and using the likes of YouTube in the future, and having platforms that public media or New Zealand media collectively may wish to put together to make sure that New Zealand content is getting out there. Because we've gone from a very broadcast-driven world to where everyone's just getting whatever they want. Now, if my kids are accessing it in their world now on YouTube, then where's that content? And it is out there.
Yeah.
But that needs to be much more focused.
Well, or I mean, just being out there is not, in my opinion, the solve. I mean, the other thing is, all these ands sound very expensive. Yeah, the total budget of New Zealand On Air, absent the PJF and experimental things like the Innovation Fund, you know, certainly if you look at GDP per capita overlaid with New Zealand On Air's budget over the years, this is now a yawning gap. And like, is there an appetite to kind of reset that? Because on a per capita basis, we massively underfund public media in New Zealand. Like is there a more structural change that might address the splintering of audiences and the some of these distribution problems?
Well, we'll come to a point in the strengthening public media strain of work where we'll have to talk funding. And I'm not going to talk about that too much because we have to have the conversation first. You know, of course, that would help, but it's not just about funding. It's also about how we structure ourselves and look at the money that we put, not just into the media, but also into the arts area, for example, and how can we do better in that? You know, we've got a symphony orchestra and a ballet. How are our current media entities working with them to make sure that what they do is more accessible to audiences out there? And I know they're doing work, but how can we connect that better? So in making that more accessible and relevant to audiences that either don't know or don't care about those kinds of things is really important, because again, they are New Zealand stories. It's our ballet, it's our symphony orchestra, it's our funding that we're putting into bands via New Zealand On Air, and we need to make sure that we get that exposure. So, you know, again, you know, when I grew up, I was watching and listening to New Zealand bands. You know, I got excited the other day when I found an LP of Rhythm Cage. I'm not sure if you remember them, but that's a band in the 80s that I remembered, and lo and behold, here it is in the record shop. Now, that's the kind of thing that I want to happen in 30 years' time for someone who's 12 now, because New Zealand music is important to them.
I mean, and that's that kind of is where it's all kind of leading to, right? This conversation is that there are really beautiful things about a kind of a shared sense of identity and a really big story that are built up out of all these strands that are. They're always harder in a kind of where there are no borders for culture and for content, where the distribution systems are largely overseas owned, and you know, and where as a total quantum of what we make amazing culture out of New Zealand, but just in terms of the and we outperform, I think, on a per capita basis, but we're never going to compete with the torrent of well-funded content just flowing out of the US and to a lesser extent the UK and Australia.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be a challenge over time, and it's compete and work with, because, you know, again, we can't necessarily stop the way that audiences are changing their behaviours, but we can also influence what's available to them. And if we're going to do that, then doing it in a very focused way and a well-resourced way and an efficient and effective way is important. Otherwise, you know, we get splintered and the other content comes to the fore.
Yes. Okay, so the kind of the big play on the other side of this is in the strengthening public media sense is the RNZ TVNZ merger.
We like to call it a new public media entity, Duncan.
Okay. I mean, that is a sexy, sexy name.
Let's
take that to the street. So this new public media entity.
That's not the working title.
Oh, my gosh. Why?
Well, I think I've just been talking about it for the last 15 minutes.
So it's not just an administrative kind of efficiency exercise. It is the future is here, and having kind of...
The future arrived about 10 or 15 years ago, we need to start making sure that the audiences of now and the future are best catered for by a fit-for-purpose public media entity. So that's the challenge in front of us now and in front of the group that we put together. I think it was a couple of weeks or maybe even last week now. And, you know, again, I want it to be audience-driven. We've got TVNZ and RNZ who have done, again, I want to reiterate that they've done a great job over the decades, but the time has come to ask the question, is this the best setup for our audiences to make sure that those stories in a much more crowded market are able to be put together, told and accessed? And, you know, the challenge isn't any different from when we first came into government, but we have moved along with a delay from COVID, and now we've got the business case group to do the final piece of work before Cabinet will be asked to make a decision at the end of the year. So, look, I know it is a challenge. Change is always difficult, but I want to remain extremely audience-focused so we can cater for those audiences.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Like, on some level, I understand that these are big changes and you don't take them lightly. But so there was a PwC report that made the business case. Is that correct?
It's a stage approach, but they did some work for us. I think it was an economic case, they call it, at the beginning, which, again, reaffirmed.
Was it good? Do you think you got value?
It reaffirmed the challenge that we have. So now the work that the group we put together with Tracy Martin as a head really have to... take the report that Deloitte's will do.
Is Deloitte doing it?
They're doing the work now.
Okay.
And assess that, make it real world, think about it with a strong public media lens and a future focus lens. We've got Bady Mackie there who's across appointment from Willie's group as well to make sure that there's good and real world oversight with for Māori audiences too, and you know, it's a big challenge ahead of them, but I'm determined to make sure that question gets asked.
So just on Māori audiences, last year one of the another review was the Māori Media Shift, which obviously was a document that came out of Nanae Mahuta's office. But that caused a lot of controversy because it seemed to, and ended up being, wasn't necessarily clear, it ended up being kind of clarified to some extent out the back of it, but it seemed to kind of push for a consolidating of Māori media into one entity, which sort of assumedly was Māori TV, and a lessening of the role for the private Māori media sector. And there's always, it feels to me, a little bit of a tension between the meeting the goals of Te Tiriti in terms of Te Reo and also kind of what the needs of Māori are in a more traditional audience. And on some level you can say that while there is reasonably significant funding for Māori media through Te Māori Pāho, the quantum of it that is kind of specifically Māori targeted within, say, a New Zealand On Air, it can be harder to read, even though I know that they as an organisation are making a lot of effort there. How will, what is your view on, how Māori and other audiences that haven't been particularly well served by the likes of TVNZ and RNZ, let's be honest, over the decades? Like you say, New Zealand has been well served, but not all New Zealands have been well served. Yep.
What's the question?
The question is, how will you ensure as you go through this process that all of those different communities are met within what is ultimately going to be a mainstream, channel or one big entity serving a lot of different communities?
But there are ways that we're making sure we can address that through the process. I've already mentioned Bailey being part of our group, Sandra Kailahi, who is a very well-respected Pacific journalist and media person, is on there as well. But I bring a bit of personal experience to this too. I've managed to straddle two different worlds, the mainstream media world, which I worked in and consume every day. And then I've got my own family and my own upbringing where things like Tangata Pacifica in the past have been extremely important for our family to make sure that we're keeping up with news for the Pacific community. Again, the people who've put that content over decades have done an excellent job. Once a week, 30 minutes on a Sunday doesn't necessarily cut the mustard, which why a previous government made sure that the Pacific Radio Trust was established, and now we have 531 and New FM. Again, that is very analogous to the setup that we have in public media, where it's TV and broadcast radio. Pacific Island audiences, young audiences, are some of the most connected online in the country. So what are we doing for them? And again, I think by looking at strengthening our public media, we will have a better focus and potentially more options on serving some of those underserved audiences. And we've had discussions with MPRT, the board and the new chief executive there about, what does a potential new public media world look like for you? How connected do you want to be there? What's important for Pacific audiences? And again, because, Morning Report and Checkpoint will always be there. That's guaranteed in the frame of that we're looking at this work. What is commercial free now will continue to be commercial free in the future. But I want to know how public media has more options to talk to different audiences in the future to make it more relevant to people from Pacific Island audiences, for people who might be in a rural setting, someone who might be in a regional setting, I would argue, some people may argue that traditional media, public media, is great for people who walk around the terrace in Molesworth Street. But what does it mean to someone in Haslam Crescent, where I grew up, in a state house neighbourhood in Christchurch? And if it is irrelevant to them, they're paying taxes too. What's in it for them? And that's what I want to know, and the challenge for audiences in the future.
And that's the thing that's kind of interesting to me, because as you pointed out, the Molesworth Street audience gets Morning Report, Checkpoint. I listen to them. I love them. It's nice. They're ad-free. They have very high production values. this new entity, how do you handle that? You know, it's going to be a mixed funding model. How do you handle that tension of, well, you know, historically there have been the certain audiences who have had to accept that their content is partly funded, or you know, some cases entirely funded by advertising, and that is an accepted part of the consumption. And that there are these other audiences, which some of them are, you know, might have particular characteristics, who get the nice ad-free version. When you move into this new space, how do you make that distinction? Especially when at some point this stuff is going to get turned off. The old infra will, the audience will shrink to the point where it's not worth the squeeze of keeping your radio and your linear television going. What's going
to
happen?
The answer to that question is that's what we've asked the business case group to look at. What is the structure? How does it stay sustainable? How do you fund it in the future? And to give us some options. So it's not unheard of. The likes of RTE has mixed model funding. And again, one of their big focuses is on the retention of culture and the language in Ireland.
But RTE's also had, I think it's got major financial difficulties, in part because the mixed funding model with digital, which is, you know, as we discussed, it's just a hard business, especially at scale, you know, and this entity will inevitably be that. I mean, doesn't it seem inevitable on some level that the government will just have to, the further you shift digital, the more the government has to pick up the tab?
Well, I don't think that's a given. And again, that depends on some of the options that the business case group will give us. So, you know, as I said, funding will be will need to be a crucial part of this discussion. And when we come to that point, we'll do it. But I don't think you should necessarily assume that. But again, we're trying to do more than potentially one thing that the public media has traditionally done in the past as well. So, you know, that will have to be a well-resourced entity. But we're also mindful of what that effect will have on those other private media as well. And some of that, as I kind of referred to earlier in the interview, is collaborating in different ways, which I don't think have happened in New Zealand media in the past. You know, I think we've operated in a model which is kind of similar to offshore, where we're all competing, and it's such a small media market that I think we need to start thinking about different ways to do that.
Yeah, I go back and forth on collaboration. Like the closer you get to a media entity, the more you realise that its identity is bound up in some what can be quite seemingly from the outside small decisions around, you know, even like how style and what are the values of the organisation. These can't be common among different entities, and yet you're asking to port pieces of content amongst them as if they are. There are complexities there that I think sometimes this, well, let's just share content, can overlook.
Yeah, look, there is a sharing content issue. There are other ways you can collaborate as well. So, you know, I think probably one of the biggest issues that you have in any other media entity is the cost of infrastructure, for example. So if we're looking at ways to collaborate there, then I think in the future, if there's a way to deal with that in a collective way, as opposed to everyone spending the same amount of money on the same kit or similar kit, then I think there are ways in a relatively small media market compared to others that we could do things better there.
I'm conscious that we're running short of time, and I could definitely go all day. I'm sure you would hate that. But there's another, you know, RNZ and TVNZ are the sort of public-facing part of the government media puzzle, or two public-facing parts of it. The sort of back room, the kind of CMS, to use like a tortured analogy for the like three people who are into publishing online, is in some ways New Zealand On Air, mm-hmm. who have been given this new mandate. But it's also the Film Commission, which is currently, as I understand it, without a chief executive. Is there a case for doing the merger on the other side as well as on the backroom side as well as the front facing side?
Look, that's not a priority for me, and we haven't had any discussions about that.
Why is that?
Because because
they're all screens, right? The convergence is happening everywhere.
I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that point. But my initial focus is on dealing with some of the structural issues within the public media now, and delivery to audience. You know, the divergence is happening, has happened, will continue to happen. But I believe, you know, that structural change is not something, not a question for now. We've just been spending the last 30 minutes talking about strengthening public media, and I do think that's the most important challenge that I have in front of me now, to make sure that audiences are being delivered what they should for the future. I don't get out of bed in the morning to think about government structure of government agencies like New Zealand Film Commission and New Zealand On Air. For me, it is about making sure that the audiences are key and dealing with the problem that is and the issues in front of them right now.
But you're talking about duplication and of resource and kind of...
Yeah, and my answer is saying that, if there's a queue of issues, then I've got
to... So you're putting, like this will be... It's basically a function of... resource and bandwidth.
Yeah, of course it is. I've said in this interview already, I've got 3 years, and the stuff we've been talking about for the last half an hour is quite a lot to do, and potentially in 3 years. I could spend the next 3 years doing a half-pie job of many things, but I think I have to stay focused on doing a good job of what is the most pressing challenges in front of me right now.
That's fair. It's a good note to end on. I'm not going to let you end there, Paul. Apologies for that. Digital services tax is something that has been floated. To me, it's a more elegant solution than that shit show we saw in Australia. Actually, let's just talk about that for a second. What did you make of what happened over there as a sort of a very interested observer?
At the time that it was happening, I was saying that we wouldn't take a similar approach, and we haven't. They've got an outcome, and look, the full disclosure, we've had a discussion about this as part of other discussions. I want the platforms to have the discussions, commercial discussions, with media entities here, because that's a commercial opportunity and revenue is an issue there at the moment. But we still hold the right to, that if we're not happy with that, and we are looking into what else we could do in terms of regulation. So, at the media announcement last week, I kind of sent a bit of a message to the platforms after the rounds of talks, because I think that's the way it should happen. And if we don't see the market doing its thing, then we'll look at that. And to be perfectly frank, we sent that message to both Google and Facebook at the time when we spoke to them at the beginning of this year. They said they were about to kick into that. So I would like to see more momentum there. We have said that officials are giving us advice about what other options we have available to us.
So in some ways you could see this as a, like looking at the PAJF as a staged thing, which might potentially... if you can convince Google and Facebook, or if they basically just start looking at their sort of social license to operate, if you will, that making some kind of bargain with a reliable income stream that flows into the media whose incomes they displaced, that might be a form of revenue that might eventually replace that quantum of funding around the 23-24 kind of area. Would that be fair?
Yeah, look, I think it would certainly, if those discussions happened, it might go some way to replacing some of the revenue. As I've said in some of these discussions, this is, from our perspective, we want to see the kinds of innovation that we are already seeing, and that may come about if more revenue comes from the platforms. We've put the Sustainable Journalism Fund together to assist in a transition. So, we're keeping a very close eye on how those discussions go. We want, as we said, we want them to be substantive.
Because you have discussions with them too, right?
Yeah.
Well, what's the vibe?
Oh, the last one, we haven't had one recently. I think that's coming soon. The vibe from the earlier discussions this year was, yes, we recognise what's happened across the Tasman, and we're going to start discussions with entities here in New Zealand, which we were happy about. Again, we wanted them to have them to be substantive and them to happen quickly.
So what's quickly, like Q3? That feels like a good kind of... time frame, right?
Maybe for you. Again, full disclosure, we've recently done a ring around a lot of media entities which sparked my comments last week to say it's time to start making sure they make substantive contact with people and give them an outline of the timelines there. Then I think there'll be a reaction from the media entities about whether they think it's substantive and whether they think things are going fast enough. And I think that will be informative for government.
What was the mood in the room like when you did your ring around?
I don't want to give too much away, but obviously...
Just around the overall kind of shape of what you're up to. Well, like, okay, so not necessarily
in general.
Yeah, like how's your sense of how the sector's responding to?
Well, that's an interesting question, Duncan, because I think people are usually pretty polite.
Interesting.
Look, we're moving. With the SPM work and the Sustainable Journalism Fund, so things are happening. I'm a firm believer that not everyone's going to like what you're going to do, but if I think about the outcome that we're after, it is audience focused. It's making sure we get that availability and accessibility to quality New Zealand content, and that the ecosystem of media in the country is healthy long term. If you were asking me that question around the last point this time last year, I would have been stressed out. And I think we're lucky to be in the position that we're in now, and looking at long-term ways to maintain the plurality and the capacity of journalists for that function and New Zealand content, I think, is really important. And, we're laying down some long-term work to make sure that we can continue to have those things.
Well, that's a lot. And I think you might have one or two other portfolios too. Is that right? You got a couple other things that you're working on? I mean, obviously, this is the most important one, like the media. You can't.
Who's listening to this, Duncan?
So look, I'll let you go and get on with your day. But thank you so much
Thanks,
for coming on to The Fold, and good luck with this prickly, weird, self-interested, hopefully important industry over the next little while.
Yeah, it's got to be about the audience. So, yeah, thank you.
True. All right. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Kia ora e te iwi. Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.